In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Thanks for listening on Friday, August 2nd, 2013, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. It is the Federal News Countdown. Every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour, the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by two experts in the world of the federal government. And this week, it's a star-studded lineup. It's Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council. Good to see you as always, my friend.
Always a pleasure.
And John Desenberg of the Performance Institute also. Happy to have you in, my friend.
Happy August.
Same to you. And it's remarkably beautiful for August. I mean, it's not tremendous. We have one humid day this week. And beside that, we're doing pretty good so far. You've each chosen three terrific stories for the most important federal news stories of the week on the Federal News Countdown. They're available now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth so you can count along. And we start where we always do.
Number three.
The third most important story of the week is selected by John Desenberg, is from the Washington Post. It's Lisa Raine's story on the General Services Administration's hoteling plan. And you've been there, right? You've seen what GSA headquarters looks like. What do you think of the strategy, and what do you think of the way the Post covered it this time?
Well, you know, more importantly, I was a GSA employee, so this has kind of a personal ring to me, and I worked in that building, and we used to laugh about it. It was like living in a relic of the past. You couldn't use the drinking fountains. There was no central air conditioning.
It was dank.
I mean, you know, window units in the windows, and you know, a famous story where we had to use a screwdriver to open our window one day, and you know, it was pretty bad. But on the other hand, there were some beautiful parts, and you know, Alan and I were talking. The administrator's office was historic and beautiful, and let's just talk about what this renovation means. It's a symbolic step forward as the government not only tries to save money, but tries to embrace a new generation, mm-hmm. and tries to, in some way, look a little more like a Silicon Valley or an office of the future.
Yeah.
You know, the question is, culturally and philosophically, is it going to match the workforce? I mean, we are still very much a paper-based government. And then there are some logistical details. They are actually, and this did not get put into the story, but talking to my friends at GSA, they are cramming more people in there than they had even originally thought as they sought to get rid of leases in Virginia and elsewhere. So it is very crowded. Also, originally, they were going to let people telecommute a little more often. Now there's been a shift in that management culture. They want to get they want people in the office a little bit more than they thought. So there's some conflicting goals there. And I, you know, from what I've heard and the people I've spoken to, there are some unhappy folks. I think in general this is a good thing, but you've got to iron out the details. This has been in the works a long time. I thought it was a little humorous that the new administrator, Mr. Tangerlini, took credit for this when it obviously had been in the works for a long time, at least two administrators back. But it's a generational change, and I think it's going to help in one way, which is moving us more towards an anywhere, anytime telecommuting environment, which frankly, since OPM announced the telecommuting rules and since the president signed that into law, it has dragged. And I'm not sure why, but it has. I think there's some conflicting signals really from Congress, which is we want to see you at work versus telecommuting. So I don't know how they're going to sort some of these conflicting philosophies out.
I had Congressman Lou Barletta, who's the new leader of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Subcommittee that oversees GSA. He was on the program this week talking about his new relationship with Dan Tangerlini since he's just taking over the subcommittee. And he replaced Jeff Denham, who had a pretty contentious relationship with everybody at that agency. And I asked Congressman Barletta if he had a chance to see the building yet. And I said, if you haven't, you should go over there and see it, because if GSA is going to be the model for this, then people should be aware of how they're going to do it. I just think the concept is really interesting, and I wonder how applicable it will be to other agencies, whether other agencies can pull it off to the degree the GSA is.
Well, you know, as you know, Francis, I don't let a story go without at least mentioning the word performance.
Of course.
And without solid performance standards for federal employees, including those at GSA, it becomes very difficult to let people work remotely. And that situation, that one issue, that management issue has not been dealt with. And here we are several years after the telecommuting era was supposed to have begun, and we still don't have solid performance standards for most employees. We can't telecommute, we can't work remotely if we don't put those in place.
John Desenberg's third most important story of the week is from the Washington Post about the GSA's new floor plan and headquarters. Alan Shvatkin, your third most important story is your colleague Stan Soloway's column in the Washington Business Journal with the headline, Small Business Overload, talking about shifting by the Army and the Air Force some engineering support contracts to OASIS. Now, on the surface, that might not sound like a big deal, but Stan sees a potential trend here, I imagine.
What Stan does and we do at the Professional Services Council, we strongly support small business. And we recognize the challenges that agencies have in fulfilling their small business goals across all five of the individual goals that they have to make. But some of the policies that Stan talks about in this article seem to be without a solid foundation, moving work, in this case, from the Air Force into the yet-to-be-awarded OASIS contractor planning to do that work without a real analysis that we've seen or we're aware of about the impact not only on the Air Force of that engineering support services work, but moving work into the small business arena that was previously awarded on a full and open competition basis. So you have a lot of industrial base arguments, those companies that were providing those facilities and support services. One of the comments from the Air Force was, well, we expect the employees to essentially flip badges and go to work for those small businesses. Well, that doesn't do anything to
bring innovation. What's the
difference then, I guess?
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly right. So it was really to draw attention to a couple of these initiatives where the drive for achieving small business goals becomes the end result rather than performance. Thanks. You're welcome, John. Or mission accomplishment.
Yeah.
And the impacts for the industrial base, significant.
And that's not the only place I imagine that you're seeing that, where the end becomes, or the means becomes the end.
Not at all. We see it in several areas in small business, but we see it in other areas, other agencies as well for different purposes.
Yeah. What is the key behind that? I mean, agency after agency after agency doesn't meet their small business quotas goals. Sorry.
Right.
They don't hit them. And it's consistent year after year. You get closer and closer and closer, and you never quite make them. And not you, obviously, but yeah, the agencies. Is it in part maybe because of this approach that we're going to do it this particular way rather than giving it? Because it doesn't sound like they're really giving the small business small businesses opportunities to really demonstrate what they can do if they're just going to set these things up and push in this direction.
Well, there's so many factors. First of all, there's been rapidly changing missions. Budgets have been wreck havoc with budgets. We'll talk about that a lot, I'm sure, even on this show today, because my next story is going to touch on that a little bit.
Don't give it away.
Holding back. It's a teaser. Just to let people know they've got to stick around because we're going to talk about that next. So agencies really aren't in control of their own budgets and schedules, part because of the appropriations process, in part because of the guidance from senior managers and the agencies and their implementation. So both of those factors contribute. Some of the goals, the quotas, are almost impossible to achieve. I mean, if you think about it on a command or a component-by-component basis, to find qualified hub zone firms located in every area is a real challenge.
Mm-hmm. Alan Shvatkin's third most important federal news story of the week is his colleague Stan Soloway's column in the Washington Business Journal, linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. The second most important story of the week from John Desenberg and from Alan Shvatkin on the Federal News Countdown in minutes on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
True innovation means anticipating challenges before they occur. Lockheed Martin was early to recognize the changing nature of naval warfare. New types of threats in coastal waters called for a new kind of combat ship. We responded with deep thinking for shallow waters, designing the littoral combat ship with speed, agility, and the most networked sensors of any surface combatant. And to make sure commanders stay one step ahead of evolving missions, the LCS is built on a flexible C-frame with interchangeable mission modules. It offers the operational flexibility to execute focused missions such as anti-submarine, mine, and surface warfare, providing access and dominance in the coastal battle space like never before. The LCS is one more example of our ongoing commitment to those who are meeting the security challenges of today and tomorrow. Lockheed Martin. We never forget who we're working for.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
At BAE Systems, we always focus on keeping troops safe. One challenge military pilots face, it's called a brownout. When helicopter pilots confront dust storms or fog, the risk of collision is much higher. That's why we created a technology that lets pilots see terrain and obstacles through these conditions. Knowing our work helps to save lives inspires us every day. We'll be there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at baesystems.com/nextfront.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Balintvi. While a family reunion this summer can be a time for sampling traditional family recipes, Dr. Griffin Rogers at NIH also suggests adding healthier foods like seasonal fruits and vegetables.
Why fry when you can bake, broil, or grill? Instead of fried chicken, fire up the grill and remove the skin and fat from chicken breasts, drumsticks, thighs, and lightly coat them with barbecue sauce. Instead of fried catfish, try baked or grilled fish seasoned with herbs, spices, or lemon juice.
He also reminds to drink water whenever possible rather than soda or sweetened fruit drinks. For more tips, visit niddk.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by NIH, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. The White House has released new guidance for agencies on how to use data and evidence in justifying their budget requests. Deloitte's Jitinder Kohli has advice for getting started. Plus, ex-Fed founder Ginger Grover joins us with trends in contractor hiring during sequestration. Those stories and much more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by John Desenberg and Alan Schwatkin, and we are up to
number two.
Alan, your second most important federal news story of the week is from a terrific, wonderful source of news and information for people who work in the federal government. It is called federalnewsradio.com, and I commend you on this choice. It's my colleague Mike O'Connell's story, headlined Vantage Point, Small and Mid-Sized Contractors Offer Perspectives on Sequestration. It's part of our special report this week, The Private Side of Sequestration. And I figured, based on your position in the world of the federal government, that you might see some value in this special report. And I'm glad that you did, my friend.
I did, and we were pleased that a lot of our member companies were able to participate and provide information. It's a great resource for you, and so I compliment Mike and the whole team for putting that together. The reason I selected it is because we're now coming up with less than 2 months to go at the end of federal fiscal year 13, and we're beginning to see real impacts from sequestration, not only because of the furlough of federal employees, but the absolute reduction in contracts. And it's not about furloughing contractor employees. The number of layoffs that are taking place in our industry is reaching epidemic proportions. Some of that resources just may not be available and be able to be recaptured as companies are downsizing, as companies are feeling the direct effect of the significant reductions in contract spending. So what was interesting about the article, it didn't matter if you were a large company or a small, if you were in the Defense Department or the civilian agencies, covered the span of those company participation, and it shows the real impact that sequestration is now beginning to have. And rue the day if we were to continue this into the next fiscal year.
Well, that's the thing that I think is kind of throwing especially Congress for a loop, because I think that many Republicans were skeptical of the way that sequestration was portrayed in January and February, but I think they also went too far the other direction in saying, well, this isn't going to be a big deal at all. And they're starting to hear, especially from personnel people at the Pentagon, how unhappy and how big the morale problems are among the civilian workforce there. Are you hearing the same thing, John?
Well, you know, I really am. And what I think is unfortunate is that it doesn't matter the quality of the work. And you can hear in this article that the way the contracts are being bundled, et cetera, it has less to do with outcomes and historically how well you've performed and more with what size you are and quality companies. And I'm familiar with some of the companies in this story are getting squeezed. And that's an issue to me where we're not paying attention to what matters. And instead, it's a matter of categorization and what bucket you fall into, as you've mentioned in these last two stories. And it's disturbing because it's the American taxpayer who loses.
Well, performance-wise, to hit this, to put this back in your sweet spot, John, is that's the exact kind of thing that becomes a tremendous that has tremendous potential to have stuff just go completely off the rails. You're getting money out as quickly as you can, and it's going to places where you don't necessarily know if it's being used particularly effectively.
And I'll talk more about this in my stories, but what we're seeing now is a marked end of innovation, an end of creativity, as people put their heads down, get under the desk, and just try to wait it out. And so, you know, I've never seen so little get done. And employees, frankly, they don't want to be in that position. No one wants to have their head under the desk, but that's the position that a lot of people find themselves in.
And we're seeing that the cuts are almost indiscriminate. And so, as we were talking earlier, if there is a plan, if there's a strategy, if there's advance notice so that agencies can plan, there's a lot of things both agencies can do and companies can do to adjust to austerity. Austerity is real. I'm not suggesting that we should be immune from cuts, although that's not a bad idea. But even in the austerity environment, companies can make rational business decisions and continue to support the customer with some advance notice, with planning, and some cooperation. All of those things are missing today.
Now, part of this that I have found a little bit curious is there are very few people on the agency side that I think have effectively made the argument that if we have to do this, say, to prevent furloughs, if we move that money from here to there, here's what we won't do. I think General Dempsey and Admiral Winnefeld and the other chiefs have been very effective at saying in the Pentagon, if we want to prevent furloughs, then we're going to have to not do these other things or not do them as often. And they're able to talk about readiness and some of the other things. I don't know that I've heard a whole lot of other agencies or the civilian agencies describe it that way. And I think that's very effective because it really gives the Congress the information that they need to figure out what they're going to do next. If this, then that. And it's pretty clear what they're doing. And Secretary Hagel's taken a lot of flack for the news conference they had about the skimmer, where people saying, well, he didn't really say much. I thought he said quite a bit. And I thought he said, listen, the way that it's structured now, we can't do it this way because here are all the things that you want us to do, and this is what it costs to do that, and we don't have that.
Right. Well, the FAA did a very effective job of showing the impact on people.
Yes, that's true.
So did the National Park Service, the risk of shutting down people's park access to the parks for summer vacations. Nevertheless, I think generally you're right. Civilian agencies have not done as good a job of articulating the mission and the impact. They've had a little less flexibility, and maybe they're a little less, a little more concerned about the implications from the feedback from the Congress to the American people. I don't know the answer to that, but the concept here, the issue here, is sequestration is having a significant impact on contractors, on their employees, and for some of that those resources just may no longer be available.
John, 30 seconds.
You know, at the Performance Institute, this is what we deal in every day, and we expect agencies to drop their targets for their performance measures and say, you are going to get so much less of something. Instead, what we find is they're terrified to drop their targets because they feel that will lead to even bigger cuts. It's a very strange phenomenon.
John Desenberg, they're talking about Alan Shvatkin's second most important federal news story of the week on the Federal News Countdown. Small and mid-sized contractors offer perspectives on sequestration from federalnewsradio.com. It is linked on the in-depth page. And when we come back, John's selection for the second most important federal news story of the week on this week's Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose.
MilitaryByOwner.com. When duty calls, they can help.
During my time in the military, our family has been transferred 6 times. That's 6 times we've had to sell or rent our home and find housing near our new duty station. Before our most recent move, my friend recommended we advertise our home on MilitaryByOwner.com. We posted the ad and quickly found a buyer. My wife and I agree, Military by Owner helped make our transition smoother.
Military by Owner. Find, sell, or rent housing near any U.S. military base. Homes advertised by homeowners and real estate agents.
Life is filled with uncertainty, military life especially. AFMA can help you breathe easy through it all. Since 1879, AFMA has helped military families with low-cost military life insurance and the best survivor assistance. We're experts at helping you manage the complexities of military life and securing your family's financial well-being. Call 1-877-398-2263 today or go to AAFMAA.com to see how we can help you.
Recently on Federal News Radio's Federal Tech Talk, sponsored by AT&T.
We are speaking with Blake Hall. He's one of the co-founders of ID.me, and we're talking about single sign-on.
If you're getting a discount from Sam's Club, you could use your Troop ID and the email and password that you verified when signing up for ID.me in order to claim that military or veteran benefit. And instead of having to show your DD-214, all you share with them is your name and your military status.
Secure Mobile Government is here.
Evaluate a department budget at a metro station.
You can now work out in the field with a smartphone and the safety and security of the AT&T network. AT&T extends the cyber defense perimeter of your agency's mobile workforce.
Study new employment stats while teleworking.
Your security is predictive and preventive. Go to att.com/gov/secure to learn how AT&T Mobile Security can safely connect you to both your agency and constituents. AT&T, rethink possible.
Has sequestration and budget cuts made performing vital IT functions difficult for your agency? If so, it's time to explore another option with SUSE Linux, the open source leader. Save time and money by lowering the cost of your operating system and associated products with SUSE's expanded support program. It's the fastest way to save money on your next Linux renewal and lower the cost of licensing without changing any of your applications or systems. Learn more at SUSE.com/spendless. That's SUSE.com/spendless. Or purchase on SUPE through CDWG.
Up nights and binge drinking. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. A study indicates older, frequent binge drinkers are more likely to have sleep problems. At the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, Sarah Canham looked at data on almost 5,000 people ages 55 and above.
Frequent binge drinking on an average of more than 2 days per week is associated with increased odds of reporting at least one insomnia symptom.
These include difficulty falling or staying asleep, waking too early, or feeling unrested in the morning. Canham says she can't tell from her study if binge drinking caused insomnia. She says older alcoholics might have sleep problems, or some people with sleep problems might self-medicate with alcohol. The study, presented at a meeting of the Associated Professional Sleep Societies, was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Who says summer is slow in Washington? Break through the noise of end-of-fiscal-year buying with GovEvents.com. The premier online resource for government and military events worldwide, GovEvents has over 25,000 members, providing a great platform to reach the government audience this busy season. GovEvents provides a cost-effective way to reach the government and military community with your brand, product, or event advertising. Contact them today at GovEvents.com to learn about available packages. GovEvents.com, where government gathers.
Now your Federal News Radio cybersecurity update, afternoons at 30 minutes after the hour. The nuclear threat hotline between the United States and Russia is now for potential cybersecurity threats, according to the State Department. The department's cyber issues coordinator, Christopher Painter, says the hotline will help countries avoid misinterpreting attacks on each other's territory. GovInfo Security reports the State Department knows the United States and Russia will disagree on some cyber issues, but the hotline is expected to play a practical role in some instances. You get your cybersecurity update afternoons at 30 minutes after the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week. This week, John Desenberg of the Performance Institute and Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council have selected the stories on the program. And John, your second most important story is Jason Miller's story on federalnewsradio.com, headlined Obama Presses for Smarter, More Innovative Government. And we talked a little bit about innovation a minute ago, and the impact that the budget issues are having on innovation. Are you confident that even though obviously the president's mostly behind this and he's putting a whole bunch of new, excited, energetic cabinet officers getting them behind this initiative, that it can go anywhere? Can they overcome the budget crunch?
You know, I gotta tell you, let's just right out of the box, I was gonna give this speech. I'll give this speech a C plus at best. You know, for me, when I hear the president's gonna talk about management agenda, I mean, for me, that's Christmas and New Year's wrapped up in one big box.
You
and
just totally geek out.
You know, I'm like, wow. And I had my web browser going, ready to watch this big speech. He comes on. He basically tells the old story about how he couldn't use his BlackBerry, then tells a little bit of a story about how they're going to bring in some IT folks from the private sector, because of course the private sector is where all the smart people are, you know, letting government people maybe not so much. I mean, that's kind of a mixed message. And then he repeats another story about O-Power, which is a company that he likes to tout. You know, they tell the same stories again and again and again. I was waiting for his goals. What does he want to get out of innovation? What is he really looking to get done in his second term? And there was none of that. It was a lot of, I think, slightly rehashed stories about how the government is behind in technology and that how we need to let data be free through data.gov and transparency. There was so little new in here that it was a great disappointment to me, and not only a disappointment to me, but to the federal executives I've spoken to since then. They said to me, where were the goals? What does he want to see us do in the second term? Instead, really the emphasis was, we are going to bring in IT folks to really make some whiz-bang new websites. And by the way, my cabinet has been tasked with coming up with some new ideas. But if you don't set goals, if you don't have a clear mission for what you want to get done, I think this entire thing falls flat. I mean, it's not just innovation for innovation's sake. We are trying to accomplish something. And, you know, my question for the president would be, what do you want to accomplish in this term? And that was unanswered.
Alan, the president says, and Jason quotes him here, a smarter, more innovative, and more accountable government for its citizens. That's a great goal, and I would like to see that happen. But when you're not able to get budget legislation out of Congress to allow the agencies to do it, I'm a little skeptical of how that will work.
Well, the agencies have a lot of flexibility, and while there may have been an old speech for those of us in the policy area who've listened to it 100 times and heard it and watched this stuff, for many of the American people, they had never. And I think a president talking about a management agenda is pretty revolutionary anyway. So I compliment the administration for taking that on. Agencies have a lot of money and they have a lot of flexibility. And every agency is a little bit different. So hopefully there'll be other indicia coming out, follow-up from OMB and others. The next big sign for me of the commitment to the management agenda is going to be the nomination and confirmation of a deputy director for management. That position is still vacant, and I hope they'll get to it soon.
The structure at OMB is starting to solidify after quite a bit of period of time of uncertainty. We at least have names for most of these spots now, and I talked to a pretty high-level OMB official this week who said, yeah, we're now that people are taking these seats and we know they're going to own them for a while, we can expect to see something happen. So maybe what you're looking for, John, is on the horizon.
Well, and when I did speak to some people at OMB after the speech, to give them a little credit, OMB director, the new OMB director, Sylvia Burwell, is really impressing the staff over there. She's talking about results. She's talking about what we're going to get done, and not as much about how we're going to get it done, but what are we going to get done, which is a good change and a good shift. So there's that. The other thing I think that is positive is that it wasn't in his speech, but he's evidently dedicating one cabinet meeting a month to innovation like that as well. So there are some good points coming out. It's just, and Alan, you know, it's great that he's talking about the management agenda, but let's count how many more times he has a speech on it before he leaves office. I bet you could count him on one hand. This is not something that he does all the time. I looked at it as this was almost a de rigueur. You know, he had to do it, and then now it's done. He can move on to things that he wants to talk about.
Yeah, about a minute left, Alan.
Management has been a key element. We've had a deputy director for management. Jeff Zients was there. He talked about that in the article and the work that Shelley Metzenbaum had done. So some of those things are certainly going to continue. Agencies have a new opportunity with the second term in the next three years to put some management initiatives in place. They've got the flexibility. Congress, I think, would be generally supportive. We're seeing more management bills in Congress than we have in the past as well. So you've got to come forward. You've got to take the initiative. The agencies seize the opportunity to take the initiative that's being given to them, so much the better. If they squander it and wait for somebody else to tell them what to do, we won't have done anything better than we've done in the past.
John Desenberg's second most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. Jason Miller's story headlined, Obama Presses for Smarter, More Innovative Government. You can read it and all of our stories on this week's Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important story of the week as selected by Alan Schwatkin and John Desenberg when we wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown coming up on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
I'm John Frieden. Please join me this Saturday at 10 a.m. for Power of Attorney here on 1500 a.m. This week, my guest will be Matthew Keller, a former contract officer and current government contracts attorney who will join me to discuss the effectiveness of teaming agreements. Power of Attorney is sponsored by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm serving clients in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. For more information about the show, visit us on the web at powerofattorneyradio.com.
Hamid Jafari eradicated polio in India. John McKinnon rescued 160 victims of child pornography. And Kevin Geis saved the Air Force $1 billion in energy costs. The list of federal employees making a real difference goes on and on. 31 individuals and teams of feds are being recognized for their work. Each has been named a Service to America Medal finalist. Hear interviews with each of the nominees and learn more about what makes them tick at federalnewsradio.com. Search Service to America.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Mary Beth Romani is the Chief Strategy Officer for Integrity.
When you're 36 weeks pregnant, you feel like the baby's never going to come, but you know intuitively the baby has to come. I feel like that's where we are right now. It feels like the government's never going to award most of these contracts, but when you step back and you think analytically, you know that they will be making these awards. There's so much pent-up demand, and the awards are obviously happening in a much different rate in the past.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Jason Miller.
Now your Federal News Radio DoD report brought to you by BAE Systems. Afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour. A couple of new Senate confirmations for the upper levels of the Navy. The Senate confirmed Susan Rabum as the Assistant Secretary and Comptroller of the Navy. The Senate also confirms Dennis McGinn as the Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Energy Installations and Environment. You get your DoD report brought to you by BAE Systems. Afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. This week's Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, selected by Alan Schwatkin of the Professional Services Council and John Desenberg of the Performance Institute. And we are at
number one.
The most important story of the week is selected by John Desenberg, fits with your second most important story of the week. That's why I put you back to back this time, John, because your most important stories also by Jason Miller, also from federalnewsradio.com. The headline, OMB defines next steps for refreshed management agenda. What did you see? What did you like? And what made an impact on you in this story?
Well, you know, I urge everyone to go out and take a look at the memo that did come out from the OMB exactly a week ago, actually last Friday. And, you know, I don't know what it says when an important memo comes out on Friday afternoon in the summer, but let's not go there. You know, what I'm excited by this, of course. But then, you know, counterpoint, you look back and OMB has issued these memos on evidence-based practices repeatedly every year like clockwork over the last 3 or 4 years. So I get it. We all get it. They like this stuff. It's a good idea. The question is it doing much? And when I actually taught a class to federal executives this week and brought up the memo and we talked about it, and you know, these people looked at this and said, you know, it looks like OMB has been invaded by a bunch of academics. This is very interesting. This is very textbook-like. But the question is, can you do it when Congress has really micromanaged many of these programs? Can you experiment? Really, who can really experiment with their program in the federal government? Some of them can, but the vast majority feel like they can't innovate, they can't experiment, they are held to very strict boundaries on what they can do and what they can't do. I think what's most disturbing is what someone told me, which is this. The older a program is, the more established it is, the more it can't get touched. So older programs that may not be performing stick around and stick around and stick around because they have almost become enshrined, or there is some group or congressman behind them. New programs that, or innovative new ideas that may be very worthy, can't get off the ground. So it's not performance that's driving what sticks and what doesn't stick. It's a matter of how long it's been established, who's behind it. And there's a fascinating story today in the Washington Post about how K Street has basically taken control of the regulatory process and has captured, they call it regulatory capture, which is micromanaging regulation down to the word and down to the sentence. And that discourages a lot of the experimental evidence-based practices that OMB talks about in these memos. And I've noticed over the last 4 years, these memos on evidence are getting longer and yes, more interesting for those of us in the field, but if you talk to people actually working the programs, I think there is a feeling like it's a growing gap between this kind of flowery academic language and the realities of the budget. So I'm worried about the disconnect and really turning people off.
Alan, this story from Jason quotes this memo that John referred to, and it uses that smarter, more innovative, more accountable government for citizens line that the president used in the speech in John's number two story. I mean, that's obviously the theme here. The issue, as John says, is on the execution.
Well, it is, but there's another benefit to this? First of all, the memo talks about how agencies are starting should start to prepare their federal fiscal 15 budget, which will be due, ironically, to the Office of Management and Budget in September before they have any idea really what their 14 budget is going to look like. Teaser about my next story. But the other thing that I saw interesting in this in the memo is it begins to really take hold to leverage the buying power and the resources of the federal government across government, not just stovepipe agency by agency, but the whole of government, the cross-cutting issues, the cross-agency issues. And we see that in the shared services initiatives. We've seen that before, but we're seeing it in strategic sourcing in the procurement world, where agencies are really trying to leverage their dollars with others rather than everybody going to market independently or implementing their programs independently. If that can gain foothold and some traction, then I think that would be a real game changer.
John, we just have about a minute left. What would you like to see this look like if what it looks like now is not really going to do the job for the agencies?
Well, let me shine a light on something I think is very positive that I'd like to see more of, which is a focus on behavioral change and how we can get the taxpayer, the citizen, to change behaviors and attitudes in a way that are beneficial at a lower cost. And the example the administration has been using again and again is getting people to pay their taxes. Let me give you the short story. When the government tells people that their neighbors pay their taxes and shows them data that the people who live near them pay their taxes, that causes a behavior and an attitude change and is very beneficial. On the other hand, the old method, when the government threatened people, was not as effective. So what I do like, and actually this comes out of a lot of the Obama campaign, as they really worked to increase turnout, they looked at behavior and how do you change behavior and attitudes. This is very effective because most of what the government does is around changing behaviors, whether it's trying to get people to stop smoking or trying to get people to pay their taxes or whatever it may be. And this is something where I think the administration has really found something important, which is we can change behavior and attitude and help the country and achieve our policy goals much more efficiently and more effectively than we have done in the past. And there's a science behind it. It's social psychology.
John Desenberg's most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. OMB defines next steps for a refreshed management agenda. You can find that story and all of the stories that we're talking about today later this afternoon linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The last one on the show this week, Alan Shvatkin's most important story of the week, when we continue on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
At BAE Systems, protecting troops is always a top priority. That's why we create combat vehicles that not only help them win the fight, but bring them back home. Our vehicles are designed from the ground up with the latest integrated solutions, all with troops in mind. Knowing our work makes a difference inspires us every day, so we'll be there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at baesystems.com/nextfront.
Each day, over 49 million Americans live in households that experience hunger, including 17 million children. Johnson's Florist and Garden Centers want to help. They're asking gardeners in the Washington area to plant extra this growing season, and at harvest time, bring that extra to one of their stores in D.C., Kensington, and Olney, Maryland. All donations will go to a local organization that feeds the hungry. Visit johnsonsflorist.com to learn more about the Plant a Row for the Hungry initiative. johnsonsflorist.com.
Hi, I'm Teresa Hancock, director of VA's My Healthy Vet National Program. At the Department of Veterans Affairs, we are proud to offer veterans free, easy, and convenient ways to become active partners in their health care and well-being. With VA's online patient portal, My Healthy Vet veteran patients can refill VA prescriptions online, track their health status, and with an upgraded premium account, access portions of information in their VA healthcare records, and secure message with their providers anytime, anywhere. This means that there's no waiting for a phone call, going in for a follow-up visit, or agonizing until the next checkup, and no more waiting on hold. My Healthy Vet puts veterans in charge of their healthcare. I invite all veterans to enroll today. My Healthy Vet is celebrating 10 years of online access. If you're not online yet, Enroll today at myhealth.va.gov.
Live music, health screenings, food, fitness demos, and more, all at Community Day 2013 and all free. Yes, that's free. Join the Federal City Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated, on Saturday, August 10th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the ARC in Southeast Washington for this annual event set to engage and foster health, education, and political awareness. For more information about Community Day 2013, visit the FCACDST.org. Live music, health screenings, food, fitness demos, and more, all at Community Day 2013 and all free. Yes, that's free. Join the Federal City Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated, on Saturday, August 10th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the ARC in Southeast Washington for this annual event set to engage and foster health, education, and political awareness. For more information about Community Day 2013, visit the FCACDST.org.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important stories of the week as selected by John Desenberg and Alan Schrodkin. And Alan, your most important story of the week is from GovExec. The headline is, "With clock ticking on government shutdown, fiscal stalemate continues." And I must say that I've tried to keep my ear to the ground and hear from people and talk to people that are both working on the Hill and covering the Hill. And I don't hear anybody in the world that is interested in a government shutdown for any reason, anywhere. That doesn't seem to be on the horizon. So I'm optimistic that even if it's ugly, at least something happens before September 30th.
I hope you're right.
Oh, and boy. That doesn't sound very encouraging, though.
Well, I too have had lots of conversations, and I've heard more and more members, more so than I've had in the past, tell me that a government shutdown is okay. It wouldn't be bad leverage. That's not why I picked the story. But it's interesting because I think the politics here are as toxic as I've ever seen them, and the challenge of finding that agreement as difficult as I've seen it. But I look at it from the agencies, just what we've been talking about for the last hour, the importance of predictability and consistency for the agencies as they design their programs, the importance of that predictability and consistency for the companies in trying to run a business and support agencies' activities. Came through loud and clear in the special report you did. You had a great conversation yesterday in the in-depth interview with Tom Timmon where you talked about a lot of these issues. That's the part that I don't think Congress gets, that their political the political environment creates enormous havoc on the executive branch and on the on everybody else. Not only contractors, but citizens as well.
See, I would just disagree with you on one very small part of that. I think they do get it. I think they just don't care. I think that they just don't, I should say there's a cohort that get it and just don't care. And unfortunately, they're the cohort that is able to prevent a lot of these things from happening. Because, as you said, there are folks that think that a shutdown is not a bad idea. Well, if that's the way that you approach the game, then I think you can step back and say it's not ideological. It really is just a matter of thinking that, well, these people aren't doing anything anyway. So what's the difference if the building's open or closed?
I looked at the calendar before I came in. If September 30 is a Monday, October 1st is a Tuesday. If that had been a Thursday or a Friday, we might have gotten a different answer. I think this runs the risk of having some real impact. And we've talked about this before. We've talked about the impacts of continuing resolutions, let alone regular appropriations. We have no chance of getting back to what is called regular order, the anticipation of regular appropriations for a full year enacted before the start of the federal fiscal year. But every other option makes it very challenging, and both for everybody. And that's why I think with Many people are starting their August recesses. The Congress is now out until the beginning of September. When they come back, there'll be nine scheduled legislative days to reach a conclusion.
That just blows my mind. I mean, and it's a calendar anomaly this year because of the there's a holiday.
Yes.
At what is that? The end of the first week that they would ordinarily be back.
Correct.
So it's a little odd this year, but as you mentioned too, September 30th is a Monday, which means that really we're looking at the 27th for the target date to have something in place rather than the 30th itself.
You know, Alan, I wanted to ask you a question. Let me step into Francis's role.
You're not allowed to do that.
You know, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to take your job. I just had a question, which is Patty Murray today was quoted as saying, Republicans now realize sequestration doesn't work. Is that true?
I don't know
where she came up with that.
Well, Congressman Rogers, who chairs the House Appropriations Committee, when the House earlier this week was not able to enact their Treasury HUD appropriations bill, sometimes referred to as T-HUD, sometimes referred to as THUD, depending on whether you're an insider or outsider. But he said that the congressional action was such that it's obvious that sequestration is not the answer going forward, and I think that's what Senator Murray was referring to. But there are lots of members. The Senate wasn't able to pass its version of that same bill this week either. They couldn't find the 60 votes necessary. So I think the substance of the article is we've got a major political issue. We watched that. We don't engage in that kind of issue from the council. But the implications of that on the agencies and the contractor community and the public is significant.
The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Alan Shvatkin on this week's Federal News Countdown, is from GovExec. With clock ticking on government shutdown, fiscal stalemate continues. That story and all of the stories that we counted down on the Federal News Countdown this week, posted later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. One final thought about Alan's number one story. It seems to be kind of a foregone conclusion, as you alluded to, Alan, that we have a CR for at least to get the fiscal year started September 30th. Odds on a percentage scale that we have any kind of budget bill instead of CRs at any point in fiscal 2014, John?
Odds that we'll have some kind of regular budget enacted at some point.
At some point, yes.
25%.
And Alan?
80 to 85%.
Wow, you're optimistic a little bit at least. I appreciate that very much, and I appreciate both of you being here for the Federal News Countdown. Great selections for stories. John Desenberg, Performance Institute, great to see you.
Have a great rest of your summer.
Thank you, and same to you. And Alan Shvatkin, Professional Services Counsel. Again, terrific to have you here, my friend.
Always a pleasure.
And we will archive this week's program at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth so you can listen to it whenever you want.